Because I don't think social media is all bad. Like, I don't think this is a matter of abstaining from these platforms. I think it's a matter of how do we figure out how they work and how they may be shaping the people in our churches for ill in a lot of ways. How can we try to harness them to shape our people for good? I think you can be concerned and express concerns about social media and also try to be using it for redemptive purposes at the same time.
You're listening to the 95 Podcast from the team at 95 Network, where we host conversations specifically designed to support leaders in small and mid-sized churches. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 95 Podcast. We're so glad you're here. I'm Carolee Culpepper, and I'm here with our executive director, Dale Sellers. How are you today, Dale?
Man, I'm doing great. I just did a conference this weekend in Palestine, Illinois. Okay. Palestine, Illinois. This has never happened to me before. I flew into Evansville, Indiana, which is on Central Time. And then Palestine, Illinois, if you go straight north on the Indiana-Illinois border, if you go straight north, that's kind of where Palestine is. It's like, it's just almost as far east as you can go. And so I stopped about an hour up and stayed in a place called Lysanias, I think is where he's at. And it's in Eastern Time. In the Eastern time zone. And so my hotel's in the Eastern time zone. And so now, you know, you get your GPS and you put in your GPS what time you're going to get somewhere, and it tells you you're going to get there after you start. It's really weird. Anyway, so I go there and then the church is in Central time zone. And so I didn't know what time it was all weekend.
So you're flipping back and forth all weekend then.
I've never had that happen. Literally the hotel that I stayed in was 3 miles from the border. So the time zone swaps over. And so I'm literally staying, 3 or 4 minutes away from when the time changes. So I gained an hour every 3 minutes, or lost an hour every 3 minutes. It was really bizarre.
I guess I've never thought about people who probably live near these borders of the time
zones. So bizarre.
Like, what if their work is in one time zone and their home is in another?
That happens. But anyway, this was a very, very rural church. It's one of, I think it and Blakesburg, Iowa, might be the most rural churches I've been in so far. And I was so thrilled. We had a great conference. The people were responsive. The church was awesome. It was a lot of fun, but I'm still trying to figure out what time zone I'm in today. So anyway, that's kind of how that went. Today we have with us a friend of a friend, if you will. I just met Chris Martin, through being introduced by our mutual friend named Bart. And he said, look, this guy's awesome. You need to have him on your podcast. And I think he's in Tennessee. He's in the Nashville area. So he's on Central Time. So Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, it's funny. We often complain about being on Central Time. Well, some of us do. I think the locals who have been here their whole lives, they don't know any different. But it's kind of weird to me to be on Central Time in the Nashville area, because I'm from Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is the far northeast corner of Indiana. And like Nashville, when you look at longitude, is basically the same as Indianapolis/Fort Wayne, like the eastern half of Indiana, which is on Eastern time. So when you get into like winter and things like that, it'll be dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because it should be 5 o'clock. If you go further up north, they're on Eastern time. Anyway, it's kind of weird. But yeah, we are on strange. Yeah.
My in-laws lived in Indianapolis for a while. And back in the day, they used to observe the daylight savings time. Now they don't, I don't think. Is that correct?
Well, so I forget how the language works, but they used to not change times, but now they do change times.
Okay. So I was backwards. They didn't do it then. Now they're doing it.
Yes.
And so you can get, and see, Evansville is like in this, like, it's like in the bottom left-hand corner of Indiana, but you just drive a little further in Indiana and you're back in the east. It's all weird.
It's odd.
So anyway, so folks, thanks for listening today. I hope you've learned a lot of American time zones.
Very informative. Now we know more.
So Chris, go ahead. Cause you're Carolee.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I'll just stay tucked over here in my Eastern Standard Time. It's pretty simple.
There's some benefits, but anyway, bottom line is that no matter where you are today, whatever time zone you're in, we have a very interesting guest who's written a very interesting book that I think is going to speak to all of us. So Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, how you got to where you are, and then we'll dive into the book in just a few minutes.
Yeah, sure. So like I said, I'm from Northeast Indiana, originally from Fort Wayne. I went to Taylor University, which is a small Christian liberal arts school there in Indiana. Got my degree in biblical literature, graduated in 2013, got married, came down to Nashville to begin working at Lifeway Christian Resources, which growing up in the Midwest, I'd never really heard of before, because I think the closest Lifeway store to me in Northeast Indiana is actually the one on Moody Bible Institute's campus in downtown Chicago. So didn't really even know what Lifeway was, but was familiar with a guy named Ed Stetzer, who I'd read throughout college. I'd read his blog and followed him on Twitter, and he said that he needed a new social media guy. So I went down to Nashville to run Stetzer World, as we used to call it. And so I helped run his social media and edited the blog that he was writing at Christianity Today at the time, and earned my MDiv through Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary while living here in Nashville and working for Lifeway. I spent 7 years working for Lifeway from almost to the day, from September 2013 to September 2020. Over those 7 years, I worked in a handful of social media roles. All of them usually related to creating, all of them definitely related to creating online content in some form or another. So started out working in Stetzer World, and then eventually he left and went to the Wheaton area to work there at Wheaton College. And I moved into a few different roles, but eventually the last couple of years I was at Lifeway, I was head of social media, which they had never really had. And they realized they needed one, and I volunteered to do it. And so for the last couple of years, I was at Lifeway about 2018 to 2020, I was running social media. And so I was running social media, meaning that I was handling, like, creating content for the at Lifeway accounts on all the platforms. And I was leading about 60 social media managers, and we oversaw 270 social media accounts. Now, a caveat on that, a lot of those were connected to our individual Christian bookstores. And so when I took over, when I became head of social media, was around the time we were closing all of our bookstores. And so a significant
timing.
Yeah. A significant portion of my work was trying to get a lot of those closed down because they were no longer relevant because we weren't opening those stores anymore. So I ran social through the closure of all of our bookstores, which was enough experience to last a lifetime. I ran it, through the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic and the beginning of the 2020 election season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, around summer 2020, I was like, I think I want to not be in social media day in, day out quite as much anymore. I think I've had my fill. Huh? Yeah. I think I've had my fill. So I eventually decided to leave Lifeway and go to Moody Bible Institute, well, really Moody Publishers, which is the publishing house within Moody Bible Institute. And there I'm a content marketing editor. So I help with a lot of, like, long form online content. I helped them launch a site called Bible to Life at the end of 2021. It was an idea they had for kind of a resource library. Imagine, like, a Desiring God or not a newsy site, but just a resource library for people who are searching for any sort of faith question online. And so I helped launch that site. Yeah, it's really great.
What is it called again?
BibleToLife.com. What I'd spend 80% of my day job doing, and it's awesome. It's really, right now, it's like us mining a lot of our books for short form content to post online, mm-hmm. for people who are searching, you know, mm-hmm. Did Jesus really die and resurrect from the dead? It's very SEO oriented and very oriented toward helping people who may not even be Christians yet, but are searching for answers to faith questions. So that's what I get to do. Yeah, that's what I get to do a lot for my day job, as well as edit about half of our books for theology and, like, legal permissions stuff. I'm not editing, like, you know, jots and tittles and punctuation. That's for other people who are much better at that than I am. But I am editing for theology or other kind of big picture things. And so I get to do those things, and I really enjoy it. And on the side, for fun, I write a lot about social media and how it changes us, as well as I serve in my local church as a leader in our student ministry and a leader of community group and things like that. So.
Wow. Are you married?
I am. My wife, Susie, and I.
Do you ever see your wife?
Yeah. Yes. I get to work from home, which is great. So yeah, my wife, Susie, and I, we met in the eighth grade. We went to college together, got married in 2013, 2 weeks after graduation, and have been married for almost 9 years. It'll be 9 years in June. We have a daughter named Magnolia. She was born in April 2020, right when the pandemic hit. So she will be she'll be two very soon. And we have a dog named Rizzo, named after the former Chicago Cubs first baseman, Anthony Rizzo. So it's a shame. Well, you know, it's a shame.
We had to put them, I think.
Go ahead.
I said, when you said your daughter's name, I thought I immediately seen your daughter's Joanna Gaines. I was like a baby with Joanna's face. I'm sure she never hears anything like that.
Right.
Anyway, what happened to poor Rizzo now?
Yeah, well, you know, when the Cubs traded Anthony Rizzo to the devilish New York Yankees, it was a shame we had to put the dog out. Just, you know, we just had to send him out. I'm sure a nice family, probably Yankees fans, picked him up or something like that. No, I'm kidding. We still love Rizzo. But yeah, so.
He can't help, he got traded.
Yeah.
So with all of that background in social media, then you go and write a book and it's called Terms of Service. Is that correct?
That's right.
What's this all about?
So when I was working in social media, kind of as my primary job, when it really took over much of what I was doing at Lifeway in that 2017, 2018 range, I was in it so much every day. And, you know, I really made it my goal to study social media from a tactical perspective. I'm very competitive, which can be good and bad. And more than anything, I compete with myself. So I...
Do you ever win?
It is weird. When you compete with yourself, do you ever win? I don't know. but yeah, kind of. So like here's an example. When I was running social media at Lifeway, if Facebook made some change, you know, to how the algorithm works or some strategic change, like back in 2015, they made, or 2016, they made live video really important on Facebook. And so I'm so competitive that I wanted to be the first one to know that these changes were happening, these strategic changes. I wanted to be the first one among my peers at Lifeway to figure out how to use these new strategic tools to the best of our ability to serve people well and gain reach and engagement and all of that. So like I set up these elaborate systems where anytime Facebook would tweet, I would get a text to my phone immediately. Anytime they'd post something new to their blog about how their platform worked, I'd get a text or an email immediately. So like I wanted to know. And I got really, really good. Like I was the social media guy. Like I knew how everything worked from a sort of strategic standpoint. And I think that's really valuable. And it really helped me in my work. And it to this day really helps me and informs my work. But as I was doing that, at the same time, started asking like deeper sort of like philosophical, theological questions about like, what are these platforms doing to us? How are they changing how I went from asking questions like, how do I use Facebook to get the most eyeballs on this new project? Which is fine and good. And it's good to do that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's no problem with using social media strategically in that way. But then I also said, well, what is it doing to us that Facebook is getting our eyeballs so easily, or that Instagram is getting, like, what is that? How's that changing us? How's it shaping us? Not only from a spiritual perspective, but also just like how we view the world from a worldview perspective. You know, people
when you say us, you mean individually,
yeah,
right? Just as a person.
Yeah. Yeah. And like people complain about short attention spans or things like that. And it's like, well, is that true? Like are our attention spans shortening because of these things, or how's it affecting our anxiety, or how's it affecting how we view ourselves and what success means? And so I just was like, well, I want to start reading. I'm kind of a self-educator and always want to be educating in various spheres. And so I was like, I'm just going to pick up all the best books on social media, kind of philosophy and sociology, and start reading them. So one of the first ones I read was Amusing Ourselves to Death, which is a book not about social media at all, because it was written in 1985 by Neil Postman. And so though it was written in 1985, and Dr. Postman, who is a professor of media ecology at New York University, he died in 2003. When he wrote the book in 1985, he's primarily addressing the revelation of the television and the dominance of the television. But so much of what Dr. Postman writes in 1985 can be directly applicable to our relationship with social media today. And in fact, he has a chapter on the telegraph, which you want to talk about like a dated technology. He has a chapter on the telegraph, and you could just replace, I've often joked, you could just replace the word telegraph with the word Twitter in that whole chapter. And it fits perfectly to the 21st century. Wow. And so I read that book and I was like, man, I really benefited from this. I found so many kind of current day applications from this book from, you know, 30 years ago. I was like, I wish Postman was still around today. And he didn't die in 2003, not only for his own sake, as for his family's sake, but also so we could be learning from him in this current environment. And I was like, Postman is not a believer, very friendly to Christians. He was kind of a secular Jewish man himself, spoke to Christian groups a lot, even has a chapter on televangelism in his book, which is very fascinating, from 1985. And again, I think it has a lot of applications to today. But I was like, I wish there was a Christian Neil Postman writing on social media, you know, like somebody who had his mind and his ideas on the 21st century, on our current media technology, but also from a Christian perspective. At the time in 2017, when I first read that book, I was having trouble finding anybody doing that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, today I've since found a small group of people who do kind of do that work. But at the time I was like, well, I could really benefit from reading somebody like that. So why don't I start writing like that? Like, why don't I kind of take on that mantle, if you will, that I don't claim to be anywhere near as knowledgeable as Postman, but I was like, what if I try to embody his ideas for our current time and from a Christian perspective? And so then I just started writing at various outlets on how is social media changing us, the way we think, the way we believe, the way we feel about ourselves. And started doing that at various outlets, started a newsletter called Terms of Service. And then shortly after I started the newsletter, kind of thought, okay, I might want to propose a book around this idea. It was actually prompted by a friend to propose a book on it, and it was accepted. And here we are.
That's so interesting to me. I was just telling you guys this before we started the podcast, but I actually gave up social media for Lent, and it's been fascinating. I'm not really one to get on it a whole lot, but it's been interesting to me how many times that I've picked up my phone just out of sheer habit to just kind of like scroll for a minute or two, you know, type thing. So I think this is an interesting conversation, especially for where I am right now in my actual personal life, to kind of see how it is just kind of ingrained in a part of our lives every day.
Is there a difference between social media and the things that are out there and just a phone itself? Is that two different tracks? And here's why I ask you that. I just finished working with a friend in Texas this week, and he was telling me, because he's addicted to his phone. And he was telling me that he and his wife went on a trip, went on a vacation to Myrtle Beach. And he said they went on a sunset walk, barefoot sunset walk. The guy and his wife, they're walking hand in hand. He's got his right hand holding her left hand. And the entire time they walked, he had his phone in the other hand and she had her phone in the other hand, and they didn't speak. They literally walked on the beach, holding hands, looking at their phone. And he said, and they got to the end of the walk and go, what is wrong with us? Mm-hmm. And so are there two tracks there? Am I being clear what I'm saying? Is there a difference between just the effect of having the phone in your hand, or is this all together?
It's together in one sense, in that it's a technology that we're hopelessly addicted to in a lot of ways and among many of us. They are different though. And in fact, like I have a friend, I call him a friend. He's an acquaintance. We're friendly with one another. Tony Reinke has written a book called 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. So like he writes about phones. I mean, he writes about a lot of things, but like that book is about how your phone is changing you. My book is more about like how social media is changing you. And the books are different because they talk about different things, and screens are different than social media. Despite it's funny. I've come across a lot of people who equate internet and social media as though that's the only thing you ever do on the internet. Now, I do think that, and I use the term throughout the book, I use the term social internet more than social media, because I think an important point should be noted here. And it pertains to your question. Postman actually makes this distinction in a lot of his work back from the 80s. There's a difference between a technology and a medium. A technology, television is the easiest way to look at this before we even bring it to the modern day. Technology is like the television. It's the ones and zeros. It's the electronics. It's the hardware. It's the, if you will, the foundation upon which the house is built. The technology is the electronics. A media or medium is the way you create culture using a particular piece of technology. So where we see this is television is the technology, but that sitcom you like to watch, that's media. The evening news you watch, that's media. The reality TV show you watch, that's media. So when we talk about social media, strictly speaking, like from an academic perspective, social media is that funny cat video. It's that picture from the family reunion. It's the video that's maybe radicalizing you on YouTube or whatever else. Like that's the media. The social internet is the ones and zeros, the algorithms, the different behavior modification technologies that are at play that serve up that content to us. Because a lot of folks, you know, I've talked to so many folks over the years who are like, I don't know why X platform is showing me this content, but they've really figured out who I am better than I do. Like better, they know who I am better than I know who I am. That's the social internet. Like that's the technology that undergirds the content. Now, so much of our conversation about social media is often, hey, you shouldn't watch this. You should watch this, or careful you don't consume too much of this content. Better that you consume this kind. And that those are all valid conversations. We should be careful and wise about what we consume on the internet. But I think that our conversation about our relationship with social media should go beyond the media, which is very surface level, and deeper to recognize that the actual like algorithms and technology, the social internet that undergirds all of that media, the social internet itself, the technology is shaping the way that we think. And it's reorienting our, like what I think a lot of people don't realize is that social media algorithms are designed to deliver us more deeply into our desires rather than deliver us from our desires. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So like, yes, like a lot of us have misordered desires because of sin and brokenness, even as we consider ourselves Christians. And so algorithms are designed to keep us on platform for as long as possible, because that's how these companies make more money, is by keeping us on the platform for as long as possible. And the way they keep us on the platform is by delivering us content that's interesting. So we stay on longer and click on more ads more likely, and then they can charge more for ads, da 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 da. So if you find that you have this disordered desire, maybe it's a lust thing, a covetousness thing, or whatever else, well, the algorithm... Let's just
use fried chicken for an example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you, I mean, fried chicken's your thing, man.
Right.
If you already have a bent toward that, and in fact, just from a spiritual perspective, what I've always said is this, is, you know, there's this misnomer out there that Satan's going to tempt you to do something that you're not really kind of bent toward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. I mean, I have no desire. One, I don't want to put needles in Mars, but I'm never going to shoot heroin. I'm just not going to do that. That's not something that I desire to do. But fried chicken, that's something I have to fight, you know? And so Satan doesn't tempt us where we don't want to be tempted.
Right.
He tempts us when we want to be tempted. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah.
With the algorithm.
And that's right. And I don't mean to say, now I do think, you know, this is a whole other conversation. I don't mean to say that all social media is bad and all algorithms are bad. What we can maybe have a deeper conversation. I think there is redemptive value, and I'm active on social media despite writing a book about how we should be cautious about social media. Okay. So it's, there's often this idea.
I didn't have a podcast with you. I told you, I'm not having you on our podcast. We're trying to get churches to use social.
Yeah. And so like, a lot of people have this, and this is just common in our life today. A lot of people have this sort of zero sum idea that if you think social media is bad, you must never use it. And like, no, I think you can think it's bad, and you can think it, there are serious negative sides of social media, and still use it. Like, it's okay to live in this middle ground. It's not like you have to wholly endorse or wholly hate it. And so I think we need to realize is that the actual mathematical equations, the algorithms that undergird these platforms and serve us up the family reunion picture or the funny cat video or that dress we looked at on Amazon the other day, but we aren't sure that we wanted to buy, but now because we saw it again, we're sure we want to buy it. All of these things are designed to get us to spend more time on platform, to spend more money, perhaps through ads. And we need to realize that they may be prone to gnaw at the worst parts of us. And it's just
our weaknesses.
And the whole point of the book, and this is why, like you say, I'm not totally against social media, nor do I advise people totally divorce themselves from it. My concern is just that we're aware. We're not going to solve problems by trying to extricate social media from our lives, because frankly, it's impossible. I talk to my 88-year-old grandmother every Sunday while I'm making dinner, and she's never used the internet in her life ever. And she will mention to me things that her friends saw on Facebook, and she'll bring them up to me because in her conversations with her friends, they'll say, oh, I saw this on Facebook, da, 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 da. And my grandma will ask me about it. So I use her as an example. She's never had to detach herself from social media, and yet it still finds a way to wriggle itself into her life. So if we have this idea that, oh, I can just solve all my social media problems by just detaching myself completely, we're mistaken. Now, I do think taking a break, like you said, Carolee, like taking a break from time to time, it can be very healthy. But I don't think, I think social media is not inherently evil, but it's not inherently neutral either. And I think we need to recognize that it may take us down, you know, take our bents, take our inclinations towards certain things like fried chicken and capitalize on them rather than encourage us away from them. It's rather these platforms are unbiased to what is maybe good or bad for us. They just want to deliver us more of what we want. And I think recognizing that is really important so that we can guard against it and not have zero relationship with social media, just have a healthy relationship with social media.
Hi, my name is Greg Moore, and I wanted to take a moment and ask you, has God given you a vision for your church, but you're stuck and you've become frustrated, wondering how to move your vision for the church forward? Many of us struggle to accomplish God's vision for each of us. As part of 95 Network's team, I help pastors and leaders take the vision God has given you for your church and move it forward to completion. In fact, I believe that accomplishing your God-given vision is easier than you think. In over 22 years in business and approximately 20 years in ministry, I've discovered that if I did a few simple things, I could accomplish God's vision in any area of ministry I worked in, as well as for the church as a whole. Some of these things include holding efficient and productive meetings. Meetings are the venue in which you determine the who, what, when, and how for accomplishing your vision. Staying focused and on task, allowing you to produce the results needed to accomplish your vision, and getting the desired outcome you prayed for, measuring the who, what, when, and how so that you move forward. If you're tired or frustrated with trying to move a vision forward, I can help you. I'll meet with you monthly to talk through the next steps needed to move your vision forward. In addition, I have developed templates you can use to make it even easier. My hope is that after 1 year, you have learned to move forward with your vision on your own. If you want to further discuss how I might be able to help you, you can reach me at greg@95network.org. And I'm also on the 95 Network website. Now let's return to the podcast.
How are some other ways that you would say that we can be wise about social media use and the things that we are exposing ourselves to?
I think making sure that you don't let attention start to assign value to yourself or others. There's a real temptation. I devote an entire chapter
to likes and stuff.
Yeah. Like your value is not determined by how many likes you get on that selfie or how many followers you have or whatever. And a lot of people are like, oh yeah, like I don't believe that. Like that's not for me. Like I think a lot of us feel that tug more than maybe we're willing to admit and recognize. Mm-hmm. I felt it. Like I feel it. It's really awkward to write a book about social media and caution against it and then have to promote that book on social media. Like it's a weird feeling. And so like I've had to fight against the principles that I write about in the book. I've had to like war against those things in my own promotion of this book because it's like, you know, anyway. So I think recognizing that attention doesn't determine value. We're so obsessed with the viral and what's popular. Like you can't watch the evening news these days without seeing some viral clip, like right after you see some terrible scene from the current crisis in Ukraine. And then right after that, you see, and now let's look at what went viral on social media mm-hmm. today. And it's just like, how do these things live back to back? I just don't understand. And so we just have this idea of like that which goes viral or that which gets the most attention is more valuable. And that's just not true. The other thing that I really caution people against is sharing too much information about yourself. Now, a lot of people, especially in Christian circles, will say, like, this is the point that I get the most pushback on. They'll say, like, well, why should I care about privacy? Like, I don't have anything to hide. Like, what? I don't have anything to hide. They can know about me whatever I want. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not saying you have anything to hide, but I think you still close the door when you go to the bathroom, probably. If you don't, you probably should. So you do have some care about privacy. Like you care about privacy, not saying you have anything to hide, but you have an interest in keeping certain things private. And so I think we should recognize that a lot of us are trading a massive, massive trove yes, sir. Of personal information for what? For personal expression. Like we're trading so much information about ourselves just to express ourselves. So an example of how I try to live out a way of not doing that is like our daughter's 2 years old and we've never posted a picture of her to social media. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, the thing that's kind of crazy about that is a lot of people, when we said we were going to do that, were like, oh my gosh, like, how are you going to do that? Like you're crazy for doing it. Like how, like you're like, we're weird for doing it. But like, imagine you go back to 2004, like less than 20 years ago, and you tell a parent in 2004, hey, in like 10 years, it's going to be totally normal for you to post pictures of your children, sometimes half clothed in the bathtub.
Oh, on sometimes the totally naked in the tub. I've got friends that do that. I'm like, what are you doing?
It's going to be totally normal for you to do that in less than 10 years. They would have looked at you like you were crazy, because in 2004, mm-hmm. a lot of people were still unsure about putting their credit card information into the internet. Mm-hmm. But now, like, it's almost 20 years later, but it was starting to happen 10 years ago, at least. People look at you like you're crazy if you don't do that. And I'm like, well, hold on. What changed? We changed. We became okay somehow, for some reason, with giving up pictures of our loved ones, our minor loved ones. And nobody needs to know, like nobody needs to be told the mm-hmm. the crazy, creepy stuff that people do with pictures of minors on the internet, often pulled mm-hmm. from places like Facebook. It's not like you got to be sharing this stuff in deep, dark places on the internet. So I think we simply do not. My biggest concern is that we too quickly embrace features and facets of our relationship with social media without asking hard questions of them first. I think there are two mm-hmm. wrong postures to have engaging the internet more broadly and social media specifically. I think uncritical adoption and passive ignorance are both poor postures to have when engaging. I think if we're uncritically adopting technology, we're not asking like, why am I using this? How does this make my life better? We just like adopt it just because everybody else is doing it. That's mm-hmm. maybe unwise. And I think just passively ignoring it, like, oh, I'm just going to ignore, because this is the posture of the church for a long time regarding social media, is just like, social media is just a fad. It'll go away in a couple of years. Like, I took a job mm-hmm. in social media in 2013, and we had a very well-meaning family member who told me and my wife in 2013, like, why are you taking a job in social media? It'll be gone in a few years. And a lot of folks thought that, especially in the Christian space. And so I think passive ignorance, like, this doesn't matter to me, so I'm just going to not pay attention to it. That's an unwise position to take. And I'm just going to embrace anything that comes along because it's all great. And I see all my friends using it without asking like, hey, what is this asking of me? What information am I having to give up? How is it going to change how I think about the world? Like, we should be asking critical questions and embrace the things that we think could make our lives better or serve other people. And so I think, and especially when it comes to pastors, passive ignorance is a really unwise posture to take, because
it's the posture so many of them are taking.
Man,
it's something.
I've had too many conversations with pastors. I mean, I'm in the process of writing a second book specifically for pastors and church leaders on how to lead people in a social media age. Like, basically, how do you shape your church when your church is being shaped by social media more than they're being shaped mm-hmm. by you? That's what this next book is mm-hmm. about. And I've had far too many conversations with pastors over the last year that basically sound like this. I don't have time to pay attention to social media and what my people are doing on social media. And now my people are going crazy because of their relationship with social media, and I don't know what to do about it. And it's because, and I don't fault pastors for this. Pastors have a lot going on. It makes me sad that pastors have to pay attention to what's going on social media, but I don't know how you just ignore it completely, because mm-hmm. who your people are in the church, who your church members are on social media is just as much really them as who they are when they show up on Sunday. In fact, it's probably more who they are than who they are when they show up on Sunday. And so
you want to find out what your deacons are really like, you know,
just see what they post online.
What they post, bro.
That's right.
There's no doubt about it.
And I'm not here to say that like the pastoral role needs to turn into social media police. I think it needs to go a little bit more that way than just ignoring it completely. And that's just not an easy line to walk. But I think there needs to be a little bit more interest and attention given than maybe there has been.
Well, in our space, you know, we work mostly with small and mid-sized churches. And as we record this, let's just say that the effects of the pandemic are loosening now. I'm not going to say the pandemic effect is over. I'm not sure if it'll ever be over. But one of the things we're beginning to see, and it blows my mind, is that some churches are going, okay, you know, we're kind of back in person again. So let's just forget about anything we do with online, internet, social, any of that kind of stuff. And so a few minutes ago, you said something that made me think. You know, you said that basically there are algorithms out there to understand the things that we like, whether it's good or bad. But we want to dive into, and when we talked about temptation, how it makes us want to dive into those things. Is it possible that we could determine or plan our social media around things that would connect people and draw them to the church? Because everybody knows before anybody visits the church nowadays, they're going to check them out online first. Does that make sense? You hear what I'm saying? Can we, in a sense, not will we create an algorithm, but is there ways we could use this system for good?
Yeah. So like one of the best strategies to get a bit tactical on social media, going from the how is it shaping us to more of that strategic aspect. One of the ways I've seen churches, and I've consulted with a lot of churches on this over the years and other larger Christian organizations. One of the ways I've seen social media used for good and kind of using the algorithm to beat the algorithm, if you will, is by using, again, I'm getting really practical and tactical here. So using like social media, using scripture or Christian quotes from people, from Christian leaders throughout history. So imagine, here's how I've executed this. I've created a spreadsheet of hundreds of Bible verses, quotes from well-known believers throughout history, you know, Lewis or Spurgeon or Tozer, things like that. Create a spreadsheet of hundreds of these things. Have a graphic designer superimpose those pieces of scripture or those pithy quotes over what I call share squares, often called in the industry share squares. So nice backgrounds or a background of the person, you know, of Spurgeon or something like that. That becomes incredibly shareable content. So that I call it a share square. It's often a square because it can be posted on Instagram and Facebook that way. Has a pithy quote or an encouraging, insightful piece of scripture. Post that regularly, that kind of content regularly on your ministry's social media accounts. Talking specifically Facebook here, let's just use one because obviously these strategies and things are different on every platform, but Facebook is the most popular. So on Facebook, on one platform that I've managed for a number of years, we post one of those every single day. Like I've got a graphic designer who makes hundreds of these for me every year. You know, after you get a nice library, you can start to recycle some of them because your audience isn't going to remember what was posted 300 days ago. You get a nice library of these things. You post them every single day. Christians of all kinds love to see scripture on their social media feeds or good, encouraging Christian quotes on their social media feeds. Then what you can do is if you have a little bit of a budget that you can use in social media, you know, maybe you got $50 a week or $25 a week that you can spend on social media. $25 a week. I've worked with as little as $25 a week and it's been great. I've never really had to work with less than that, but I'm sure it could work. So I've often spent $25 a week boosting one of those share squares on social media. The one, usually what I do is like, which one performed the best organically before we spend any money, find the one that worked the best in the last week. You know, what I do is I say every Monday, I'm going to boost something for 7 days. So first thing I do when I log on Monday morning, find, all right, which Bible verse share squares perform best in the last 7 days, boost it, find an audience, especially if you're a church. Again, very tactical advice here, but if you're a church boosting on Facebook, you need to be creating an audience of people who are within a set distance of your church. You need to be like, you don't need to be wasting money boosting your content. If you have a church in South Carolina, you don't need to be getting your social media content in front of people who live in Indiana. They're not showing up on Sunday morning. You're just going to be wasting, unless you're like trying to build some global brand for your church. And that's a whole other conversation. We're not doing that over here. Yeah. Yeah. I have problems with that philosophically, but if you're going to do that, if you're going to create a Facebook audience, you can create an audience of targeting people within X number of miles of a zip code. You can do that. And you can find tools online to acquaint yourself with how to do all of these things, but find like, I want to target people who live within 50 miles of this zip code with this, you know, who maybe have interests of a certain kind, whether you're targeting Christians or non-Christians, that's up to you. And you can run that ad, that encouraging piece of scripture for $25 over the course of a week. And you can reach probably 5 to 10,000 people within 50 miles of your zip code just by doing that. And then what you can do is all of the people who engage with that piece of content, you can begin to reach out to them either through a Facebook message, mm-hmm. or you can invite them to like your church's Facebook page from their engagement on that piece of content. So that's one way. And then because they've, again, how the algorithm works, because they've engaged with that piece of content, they're now more likely to start seeing content from your page because they've engaged with that one piece of content, even more so if you can get them to follow slash like your church's page or your organization's page. So that's a strategy that I've used over the years to great success. And I think that's a way that we can kind of use the algorithm for a redemptive purpose.
That's a great idea, man. You know, I want to make a plug right quick. We have a guy on our team named Jesse Barnett. And what Jesse does is he's what we call a digital discipleship coach. And he comes along beside a pastor and helps a pastor take their message. And we say, get more mileage out of your message. And he will, it's a 1 month course. It is $300. It's not expensive. Jesse does 4 sessions with you and he will teach you how to take and do exactly what you just said. Because in our space, so often our pastors hear this conversation and they're going, I don't know anything about that. You know, and I actually had a pastor one time tell me this. Well, you know, the way I work is if there's something I don't know anything about, I just ignore it. You can't do that with this particular issue. And so, you know, reach out to Jesse at Digital Discipleship Coaching if you would really like to understand how to take your message and get more mileage out of it. Because you just literally answered that. That was a great answer because we can take the internet, social, whatever, we can still take it and strategically use it to reach people because that's where people live.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, because I don't think social media is all bad. Like, I don't think this is a matter of abstaining from these platforms. I think it's a matter of how do we figure out how they work and how they may be shaping the people in our churches for ill in a lot of ways. How can we try to harness them to shape our people for good? And I think that's a really noble and worthy effort. And I think, again, I think you can be concerned and express concerns about social media and also try to be using it for redemptive purposes at the same time. And I think it's important to recognize that you can do that. And I think that, I mean, that's what I try to do. And I think it's important for pastors who are like, I see how social media is shaping my people. It's just terrible. Well, maybe there's a way you can use social media to try to shape your people for good. In addition to how you're discipling them.
That's why you're on this podcast today. Mm-hmm. It's because, you know, again, a lot of pastors, you've hit two very important points. And one is it's like, man, I'm having hard enough time pastoring these people, not knowing what they're posting on social. Because as a pastor, it can be discouraging when you see leaders in your church who just blow people out. Mm-hmm. I've got friends. I don't want to go too deep into detail, but I've got friends I don't follow anymore because they act very ungodly when they give people a piece of their mind. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can't really afford to give away much of that. So, you know, just blowing people out and that kind of thing. And so our job is not to police the internet when that's not what today is about. It's not, we're not policing people's social. I just want you to understand, if you're listening now, you have the opportunity to take this tool that the Lord has given us with social and use it to reach people.
And let me say this. Like I said already, and like you just said, Dale, I don't think pastors should feel obligated to police what their people do on social media. However, and this is why I advocate for having some knowledge of it without being a full-time social media cop. If you totally ignore it, or if you like, you hear church member A or Deacon B, they're acting a fool on social media. They're calling out such and so and being foolish. If you have some wrong-headed idea that foolishness will stay on social media and will not spill into your church, you got another thing coming. So while I don't advocate that you become a full-time social media police officer and keeping tabs on what all your people are saying at all times, if you just ignore those activities completely and then act surprised when that church member or that deacon start trying to overthrow things that foolishness that you've heard about online starts infiltrating into the actual embodied presence of your local church, don't be caught by surprise. If you're caught by surprise, I think you ought to count yourself a little foolish as well. So if we have this idea,
that was very kind how you said that.
if we have this idea that what people do online is just always going to be contained to what happens online, we need to write our thinking about how internet and online activity so often spills over into offline activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a heart issue with some of that stuff, with negative things that come out. And I mean, if it's a heart issue on social media, then it's a heart issue in church,
yep,
you know, in your relationships with other people. So definitely a reflection. I think it's just easier to share those things on social media because you're behind.
Yeah.
Behind your phone.
Yep. Everybody loves a strong, to be a strong keyboard warrior, you know. It's a lot less vulnerable than actually saying those things in real life when you might get, you know, like hit in the mouth or something.
Yeah. So I guess in kind of summary, what I'm hearing really is to be wise about social media and always be alert. Isn't that what God tells us to be anyways? But then also to, you know, use it for good, use it, you know, constructively, especially if you're, you know, in a position of ministry. I mean, it's a great outlet to reach people who you would otherwise not be able to reach. So interesting points that you make today, Chris. I like that.
Thanks.
So tell me this, when you wrote the book, what were you hoping was going to happen?
My hope, the book was not written for people who maybe know all of this already, because it might just seem kind of like old hat. You know, I've heard from a couple of friends who are very experienced in social media who didn't learn anything new, because I mean, it's not for them and they really appreciated it, but they're like, I'm going to pass this to a friend or a family member who doesn't know about any of this. So what I wrote this book for anyone who uses social media and hopes to better understand these platforms. You know, these platforms know so much about us. I think it's good for us to start to learn some more about these platforms. And that's my hope, is to kind of pull back the curtain. You know, if the Wizard of Oz is just this man behind a curtain, right? Is to kind of pull back the curtain on social media and help us to better know it and better understand how it works. So that when we see that piece of content come across our feeds that makes us really mad, because that's the thing. Everyone thinks, like, you know, a lot of people think, oh, social media just wants to make us happy. Well, no, social media wants to make us either really happy or really mad. They just want us to feel something. So I think a lot of people don't realize is like that angry content, that content that makes you angry, that comes across your feed, is as important to that social media platform as the stuff that makes you happy. Cause you'll bang out some angry comment in the comment section, and that's just as valuable. You stayed on the platform, and that's just as valuable. And so I think my goal is just to try to get people to pay attention. I opened the book with an illustration about how social media is like the water in which we swim, and we're fish, and we, like, fish can't live outside water. It's impossible for us to live outside the influence of social media anymore. Even if you totally delete all your accounts, you'll be like my grandma who still hears about what happens, even though she's never used the internet. And so I think it's best for us not to try to be fish who learn to live outside water. That sounds a bit ridiculous, but to learn how to live amidst the water. And the book is me swimming around saying, hey guys, the water's toxic. Maybe you didn't I think the water's a little bit more toxic than you recognize. So put on your little fishy gas masks. You can't swim outside the water. We need the water, but the water's poisoned in a lot of places. And so let's learn how to live amidst this poison water and do so wisely in a way that glorifies the Lord and helps us keep our own sanity. And so I just want people to go from maybe having an uncritical embrace of social media to having a bit more critical arm's length relationship with social media. That's what I think the book is kind of meant to do.
It's really good, man. I'm like I said, when you first started talking to me, I'm like, I'm not sure if I want to have that on or not. Cause the guy saying, you know, don't use social. And I'm like, we're not going to have a guest on the system on social because that just isn't going to work. But, so you have a really clear picture in mind of what you want to see happen if somebody reads your book.
Yeah. I would love for them to not totally abstain from social media unless they find that they are like actually addicted to it, in which case, like, seek a counselor or someone that can help you wrestle help with that. But I would say my hope is that folks find ways to use social media constructively. You know, I think there's a helpful kind of dichotomy of being a consumer versus being a cultivator that applies to all kinds of areas of life. It's really our default mode of using social media is just to consume. just watch this, listen to that, read that, and just really consume on the internet, be entertained. Oh, that's entertaining. Oh, that's insightful. And we're just like gorging ourselves on content and on social media. My hope is that maybe folks read the book and say, oh, I want to have a more intentional relationship. I want to use these platforms for good, not just consume all the time, but maybe I want to figure out a way to use it more constructively, rather than just let the internet happen to me and let just be a recipient of anything that comes at me. And, oh, I'll just be blown and tossed by the wind of whatever comes across my feed. But my hope is that folks start to have a more like authoritative, in control and intentional relationship with what they come across. Perhaps that's putting screen time limits on certain apps, like social media apps, so that you're really intent. Like if I only get an hour on Facebook every day, I'm going to make sure I use that for some express purposes rather than just mindlessly scrolling or whatever else. You know, that's just one possible way that folks may use it more intentionally rather than just kind of passively, whatever comes my way. So that's what I would say.
That's great. Such good information today. I've really enjoyed this. And like I said, it's timely with my Lent, giving up my social media channels for a little while. So anyway, Chris, what we love to do when we kind of wrap up our podcast is to ask our guest if there is a word of encouragement, hope, or advice that they would give to the pastors, the leaders, or whoever is listening to the podcast today.
Yeah. What I would say is, pastors, if you're listening to this, you likely feel like social media is this alien sort of force, totally outside of your bounds of knowledge or control, that is invading your community and your churches in ways that you cannot combat. And I would say that feeling is normal and frankly quite correct. However, the good news is the God that you serve is the God of social media as well. And what I would say, encouragement, a word of advice to pastors, is recognize that social media is discipling your people as much as, if not more than, you are. And while I don't think the answer to that is for you to just live on Facebook all day, not the answer, I do think what it means is for you to have maybe a little bit more active relationship with social media, to just be a little bit more knowledgeable about how it is shaping the people that you lead, and to shape your worship gathering, shape your church community in ways that can combat that constant influence of social. The average person spends 2.5 hours on social media every day. The average church member doesn't spend that much time as part of the church community in a week. Mm-hmm. This is really a matter of time. It really is a matter of time. And I think my encouragement to pastors would be, find ways to build community, build trust, build relationship with the people in your churches that maybe goes beyond the bounds of more programming, though that can be helpful to be sure. But, you know, find ways to have morning coffee at McDonald's on Monday mornings with the folks in your church, or, you know, informal gathering is going to, you know, playing softball in the park on a Saturday, or getting together to watch a movie on the weekends, or, you know, just find ways to make the community that is your church family maybe a bit more appealing than the hyper curated behavior modification feeds that work on their hearts and minds 2.5 hours a day, every day. And it's not going to be easy. It's a long fight, but I think if we have any hope to fight it, it's going to require a lot, maybe more time, and just like life on life living. But also the undergirding and encouragement under all of that is God is with you. The Holy Spirit can work in the hearts and minds of your people, even through the bounds and sometimes shackles that social media can place on their hearts. So time and prayer, and perhaps fasting for the hearts and minds of your people is of utmost importance. And just if you find yourself discouraged in perhaps your battle for influence over your people with social media, recognize that your God is with you in that battle as much as he has been with his people in any battle that you read about in scripture or since. So just be encouraged by that and do what you can to fight the fight against maybe social media's influence on your people. But at the same time, trust the Lord to also fight that fight for you.
If a pastor's listening and he's going, man, I'd really like to talk to that guy personally. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, totally. You can find
How would they reach out to you?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at ChrisMartin17. That's where I engage with most people around this stuff, at ChrisMartin17 on Twitter. And I'll give my email. If you have show notes, you can put this in the show notes too. My email is chris.j.martin17@gmail.com. And people can reach out to me there directly. Or if Twitter's easier, we can start there and maybe move to email or phone call or something like that. I love, even if it's just a one-off 30-minute phone call, I love talking through this kind of stuff with pastors and such as best I can. Every context is different, and I'm not a know-it-all of every situation, but I've talked with a lot of, especially in the writing of the second book that I'm working on, I've talked a lot with pastors about these issues, and I recognize that a lot of folks just feel helpless. And I just want to, I'm happy to talk and just help people feel like they're maybe not in as bad of a spot as they feel like they are, as best I can. So reach out to me and I'm happy to chat.
Thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today, man. We deeply appreciate it. We really do.
Thanks for listening to the 95 podcast. We look forward to sharing another episode with you again soon. In the meantime, here's a preview from our next episode.
If I were to look at one of your vision days and one of the steps was, how do we communicate a mission vision to our church? I want to be able to come alongside people and say, so what are you going to do? What are the deliverables to come up with that? What are the steps you're going to take? And then, you know, how do we track those steps? How do we know if they're actually being, if we're achieving what we want to achieve? And so those are the kind of things I put templates together for that I think people could use. And I can help walk people through that.
Be sure to visit our website at 95network.org. The website is loaded with helpful resources created for small and mid-sized church leaders. Until next time, have a great week.